Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hey, it's David Wilde, and I presume you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Rio Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Why?
Why? Because this story is deeply involved in marriage and what marriage is like, and that's where I stayed when I got married a few months ago.
Now, you stayed at the Rio in Vegas, but you didn't get married at the Rio.
We got married at our friend Dave Willard's house in Henderson, Nevada.
Wow.
Which is outside. But, you know, who wants to come from Henderson?
Yeah.
Nobody, really. So, Henderson actually is like got all this awesome stuff in it, but it's just a terrible name.
It's just a suburb. What's the big deal?
I know, but Henderson is like Ferguson. It doesn't.
So what? You're either from Henderson or Summerlin. That's it. That's.
But Summerlin has this, it sounds like kind of sun and fun things.
I don't know.
From Summerlin. I'm from Henderson.
Well, I know.
I'm so mean. Someone's going to kill me.
The good news is our guest tonight, David Wilde. David Wilde is here, and he brings forth a topic, how my wife yelled at me and saved the world.
She's a powerful woman.
She is a powerful woman. This is interesting because I've had two husbands, and when I yell at them, they don't go out and save the world. One of them got another girl pregnant.
When you yell at them, they just go out.
And the other one, we ended up in mediation, and finally our divorce is going to go through this summer. You know, Hannes, it's taken 4.5 years.
You know, these kids today, people can't even get a divorce normally. They got to go into mediation.
Do you know, I read recently that the reason why the divorce rates are dropping isn't because people are getting, well, it is because people are getting divorced less, but it's because people are getting married less. So the divorce rates.
I thought you were going to say because divorce is too expensive.
No, because basically what happens is people get into long-term relationships, and before they can get married, they end the relationship. So there doesn't have to be a marriage and a divorce.
Yeah, this seemed to be a weird, like, you know, I didn't get married in what should have technically been my first marriage, but I never got married. And I know a whole bunch of people who are on their first marriage that should have been their second marriage.
Right.
Because they never bothered to get married. Whereas a bunch of 20-year-olds in the past 10 years have been getting married, which makes no sense. They're all getting divorced. So finally, they've wised up.
I want to say that,
Don't marry somebody unless you meant to be married to them.
I want to say that to my nieces who are all in their 20s now because all their friends are getting married. And there is, you know, the excitement of the party and the colors and the vacation and the honeymoon and the new house.
That's all the worst possible reason to get married.
I know that, Hannes, but we're talking about 25-year-olds and they don't fucking know any better. But what I say to them is you have to understand these guys are all getting married for the first time.
Yeah.
There's going to be a second marriage and maybe even a third. And if you want to have a party, just have a party. You don't have to actually commit to somebody to have a big fucking party with a dress.
That's true. I think that'd be an awesome new trend where people just, a couple just gets dressed up as if they were getting married and just skip that part.
Yeah.
So it's just all reception.
It's all reception all the time.
I like that.
How my wife yelled at me and saved the world. Here's what I know he's talking about, Hannes. He's talking about 9/11 and what happened immediately after that.
Yes, we all felt like after 9/11, we're all like, we should do something. And you know, George Bush was not really any help because he was like, you know what would help America? If you go out shopping. I remember distinctly, he was like, help America by holding up the economy and go shopping. It's like, that's what we're reduced to. World War II, we built, you know, destroyers and tanks and we saved the world, but now we should go shopping.
I'm not sure, though, what would be the proper answer to that. I mean, what should he have said?
Just something else. Just something, because he just had a way of saying things that made it sound stupid.
Yeah.
You could say, like, listen, you know, one of the things that Obama would have been like, hey, you know, one of the things we can do is keep this economy moving. We're powerful. You know, our power comes from our economy. Let's not let it, you know, let's not start saving. Let's live our lives normally. You can say it in a way, but he was like, let's go shopping.
Mm-hmm. I guess. Okay. Well, David Wilde.
Really out of date. I'm doing George W. Bush impressions.
That is pretty bad. Yeah. But listen, we're talking about that era. It was 9/11.
Talk about somebody who actually did something.
It was 2001, and David Wilde's wife yelled at him. And here's what I know about David Wilde. He is not only a writer and a rock critic, but he...
He's deaf from his wife yelling at him all the time.
He produces a tremendous amount of shows. And this is so interesting because I don't think people out there in America even realize that these shows have writers and what it takes to produce these shows.
Yeah.
So
let me just throw out some of the names
of the shows that David Wilde has been associated with. The Billboard Music Awards.
Mm-hmm.
The iHeartRadio Music Awards. The Oscars Red Carpet Live 2014. The 58th Annual Grammy Awards. The 56th Annual Grammy Awards. The CMA Country Christmas. So you hear all these different shows, and you can see them kind of coming on your screen, and sometimes we watch them.
Yeah, and you don't think it has a script, but it does have a script.
It does have a script. There definitely is a beginning and a middle and an end, and you don't, it's super interesting. And David recently did a show called Shining a Light, a Concert for Progress on Race in America. Boy, that's not very catchy, is it? Shining a Light, a Concert for Progress on Race in America. But the point is, so he invited me down.
Yeah, it's not as good as the concert you put on. Oh, wait, you didn't put on a concert. This is the point. The man does things.
He invited me down, though, to see the rehearsal, because that's the other thing. All of these shows, of course, are rehearsed.
Yeah.
It's not like you can just bring on Alicia Keys and she'll just know exactly where to go. I mean, somebody's got to prep her,
the sound people have to, you know, it's like the Grammys. They're like, oh, my God, it's... You know, this is amazing. We've got AC/DC followed by, Tina Turner. Okay, I'm a little out of date. You know, and it's like, no, that whole show happened before.
Right, exactly. In other words, these things are produced and there's lighting and there's effects and there's teleprompters and all sorts of things involved. And David Wilde makes a lot of that happen. So I think this story is going to be about his wife yelling at him to make a concert happen. That's my point.
Yes, yes.
All right, so we're going to
hopefully
hear...
it's not a story. It's like, why don't you do the laundry? This is going to be a big disappointment if that's what she was yelling at him.
Well, here's what I did after 9/11. I made a coffee cake. And I felt like, well, at least I'm feeding my friends.
By the way, at 9/11, I was sound asleep because that's what I like to do if I don't have to do somewhere else. And you called me and woke me up to go look at the TV.
That's the kind of friend I am, honey.
Yeah, thanks. I could have been in nice, ignorant bliss for a long time. But then then I'm like, I don't know. It's like everybody else, like, we get together and I'm driving up to your house up Western Avenue in Koreatown. And every... You know, it was like a Saturday, and it was sunny, and people are out on the street.
No, it wasn't a Saturday. It was a Tuesday.
It was a Tuesday. I didn't have a job back then. The point is, it's sunny. People are out on the streets, and it's like everybody animal. It's like so weird. You're like, the world is ending. You're watching the TV. The world is ending. The world is ending. You walk outside, not ending. You realize that's New York is a long way away from here. It didn't mean it wasn't tragic. It didn't mean it was terrible. But it's weird that, like, when you're watching TV, you're like, "Well, this is it. This is Armageddon." And then you're outside. It's like, "Oh, the world is big."
I know. It's true. You hear birds chirping, and there's still order going on in other places.
Yeah, yeah. It's like in movies. It's always like the whole world is coming to an end. The whole world never comes to an end at one time. A part of things can come to an end.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you go 20 miles away from there and you have no evidence that that's
happening. You're good at looking at the whole picture. I'll say that, Hans.
I'm big with the whole picture.
All right, you guys. David Wilde's on his way right here. But before he comes on, I did want to remind you that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, you already know what to do.
Yes. If you don't write us a positive review on iTunes, the terrorists win.
that's the main thing.
What I like to say.
And why
not? Yeah, you can subscribe on iTunes. Just tell your friends
there
if you like
go.
Us.
Why not follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at Storyworthy, and feel free to shoot us an email at info@storyworthypodcast.com. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stick around because David Wilde is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have comedian Greta Titelman.
And I will be talking about the time I spoke with a clairvoyant.
That's next time on Storyworthy. Hello, Mom and Dad, and the rest of you. It's Phil Rosenthal. You're listening to Storyworthy. And we're back. We've left the Rio, and we've gone a few blocks away to Trump Tower, and we're peeing on it. just because
Wait
that's
a minute.
Well, how
Does
I
Does Donald Trump have a casino in Vegas?
Nobody's got a tower.
No, they I didn't realize that.
He was Donald Trump is such a sleazeball that the Gaming Commission of Las Vegas wouldn't give him a gaming license. This is completely true.
Wow.
So he has a hotel. There's no casino in it.
I had no idea.
I just read that the other day.
Is there residences? Is it just businesses?
I believe there are residences as well. I believe that there's a hotel there. But there's no casino because it's too sleazy for Vegas. That can't be a good thing.
His wife is just smoking, man. She is so hot.
His fourth wife. Let's get this straight.
No. I think it's only his third. Do you know the only other president that has been divorced in the White House was?
Ronald Reagan.
And now Trump would be the only president to have three wives.
Yeah, he'd also be the only guy who rails against immigration who has married nothing but immigrants. He's never married an American. He's never married an American, and he loves America. Interesting.
Wait a minute. I thought Marla Maples is from America.
I don't believe that she is.
Yes, she is. She's as American
by the
as
way,
apple pie.
You talk about things that make us sound old. You know who the fuck Marla Maples is.
She's on Dancing with the Stars, man. She's back.
Really? Does that make you feel younger to mention Dancing with the Stars? Let me get my cane.
And their daughter, Tiffany, that they named after the jewelry store.
Never mind. I'm sorry I brought it up.
And
let's move on
son,
to positive things about America.
His other son's name is... Okay. All right. We'll worry about it later. Okay. Donald Trump's son now that he has with a hot wife. Oh, they're all hot. But this wife, his name is Barron.
Like I said, I'm sorry I brought it up. Let's just stop.
Kind of makes me laugh. All right, you guys. David Wild is here right now. He is a writer and a critic in the music and television industry. And you know, Hannes, he has been on the Adam Carolla podcast more than any other guest.
He is the Jay Leno to David Letterman's Late Night.
No.
Jay Leno was a guest on Late Night.
No, he's like a sidekick.
He's like a sidekick. It's true.
David Wild, when he's on Adam Carolla's
show.
He's
like Don Rickles to Johnny Carson.
I'm always.
A frequent guest.
I listen to Adam most every day anyway. But if David's on the show, I definitely listen. He always has some really funny and insightful things to say.
Yeah, it's the greatest.
Oh.
What?
That was the most insincere comment I ever heard in my life, honest.
Hang on. It's the greatest. Was that better? Did you?
Oh, my gosh. David has also been a contributing editor of Rolling Stone magazine, and he knows a lot of cool people. I'll say that. He's a consultant, and he can be seen on the 80s on CNN, brought to you by Tom Hanks.
Mr. America, Tom Hanks?
I think so. You can also find David Wild over on Twitter at WildAboutMusic. Okay, you guys, whoever you are, put your hands together for David Wild.
Unlike Hannes, who's been married for about an hour and a half, or Christine, who's been married maybe for a decade, but to eight different gentlemen, like the lost Gabor sister that she is, I've been married to the same woman for 20 years, which means roughly, and I mean roughly for her, when 9/11 happened, we had just had our second child. We had a baby and another young son in the house. And I remember that day really vividly because we were up at all hours, as you are with kids. And I remember I was watching CNN exactly when things broke. And I remember my first thought was, I'd just written a book called The Showrunners, where I followed around different showrunners, including a guy who did a show called 7 Days. And it was a science fiction show, very long forgotten, but in which they would go back in time 7 days and stop some horrible terrorist attack. And I had seen like attacks on the White House on this show. And I remember turning on CNN that morning at like 6:30 or whatever it was and thinking, why are they showing 7 days? It was just canceled. So that was my first incoherent thought of many. And then that was a Tuesday morning. And for the next few days, it was like trying to watch, as we all did, or many of us did, obsessively watch that news, but while juggling two children so that, you know, you didn't want the kids, definitely not the older one seeing it. The younger one was probably too old to notice. But I remember my older son did notice, and I remember it really vividly because he was in a carpool to nursery school or whatever it would have been. And he said to his friend, and my wife quoted this later, a lot of people died in a fire in New York and they're still dead. And I remember thinking, wow, that's like the moment he understood what death was, that it was final, was that actual sort of next couple of days. But so 9/11 was a Tuesday. Life goes on like that until Friday for me. And Friday evening, I think it was, Joel Gallen, who ended up being the executive producer of the America Tribute to Heroes, called me. And I had just sort of ventured into writing for TV, mainly jokes and comedy. And so I was surprised when he called. My wife picked up the phone first, and he started to explain that all the networks had gotten together and decided to do a television event to respond to 9/11. To which my wife, a very nice person most of the time, started to yell at me and him and said, my memory is, at least, that's a horrible fucking idea. This is not about celebrities. What are you doing? And I picked up the phone. As she was yelling, I started to type a few words. And ultimately, those were most of the words that Tom Hanks said. Everything goes back to Tom Hanks eventually, to a name drop eventually. That's the opening of the show. The show actually began with Bruce Springsteen performing a song called My City in Ruins, and then we cut to directly to, without applause, without show business, to Tom Hanks. And I actually, just when I realized I was doing this, last night I watched the first like 20 minutes of America Tribute to Heroes. Since probably in a decade, I haven't looked at it. And because it's always like when you do something you're proud of, you almost are afraid to look at it because you think, what if it got worse in the interview? What, maybe I not that good. And which I get a lot of reinforcement for not being that good. But yeah, that was the beginning of that was a Friday. And we had a week to put together a television response, which is not much time at all. It was also a Jewish holiday that week. And I remember I actually had to take time off. I actually ran into Phil Rosenthal, who was a new friend of mine because I'd written about him in Rolling Stone and Ray Romano. I asked Phil to come help me, which is, I could tell you, I don't know how much time I've used. There's a million stories about, he came in the day before the show, I think it was, and said, is there anything you feel like you need to work on that you haven't written? I said, well, by weird coincidence, being a Jewish guy, I won the Muslim Public Policy Award in 2001 for doing interviews for a documentary with Yousef Islam, Cat Stevens. So I wanted to, much like this Donald Trump you speak of, make sure that there was no bigotry and no hatred of a whole religion. So I said, I really want to write something. And we sat and wrote something together, which ended up being for Muhammad Ali and Will Smith. And Muhammad Ali really couldn't speak, so Will sort of spoke for him. And when Muhammad Ali came in, he looked terrible. He was shaking, and it was sad. And then he walked up to Phil and I and looked at Phil, and something about Phil's punim, as we say in Islam, he went, pulled back a punch and smiled like he was going to kill Phil. It was great. The weirdest sort of follow-up to all that is that a couple years later, there was another nightmare and another reason to do a telethon. And I got a call from, I think it was George Clooney, saying, you're supposed to write something else. Muhammad Ali is going to do this again. He wants you to write for, it ended up being, I think, Chris Rock that time. And it happened to be a day I was coming home from doing a TV show. I got home at 8. I had to write this thing by 8:45. And my son, who had just been born the first telethon, came up to me and said, Dad, I need help on a paper. And I was about to go, no, I can't help you, kiddo. And then I realized I don't want to be that dad. And, you know, I blow him off for George Clooney, although I like George Clooney. And, but I said, okay, kid, what's your report on? He said, on Islam, which is what I get for sending him to a fancy private school. And, I said, what do you have for your paper? And he wrote, and I forget how many precepts it is there are in Islam, but he goes, there are 6 precepts in Islam. And he started to name them, and the third was charity. And I went, that's what would be in Ali's heart. And I wrote we wrote together what Ali, the words for Ali for that other telethon. So it all, you know, the fact that a little Jewish child wrote for Muhammad Ali about what Islam means, it shows that we should maybe move past whatever certain candidates are selling. But yeah, so I think I'll wrap this story up other than saying it was one of the most moving, and definitely the show I'll always be proudest of because it didn't have anything to do with celebrity. But the reason it had nothing to do with celebrity was that I took exactly what my wife was saying and tried to make it, rather than yelling at a husband words, into the words that Tom Hanks could say that would speak to that moment. And, you know, it's like Hannah said before, something about like that desire to feel like you could do something. And that's actually, those are the first words. And I remember just being aware when I watched the show today, it brought back the other most powerful memory, and then I'll stop, was that after that, the next song was a song by Stevie Wonder called Love's in Need of Love Today. And it is my most favorite song of all time. And it wasn't then. It just was a song I always loved. But what happened was Joel Gallon had called that night, and we started talking about who needed to be on it. And it's like, I'm from Jersey, so we both knew that Bruce needed to be on it. And then I think I said, Stevie Wonder. And he goes, what song? And I said, Love's in Need of Love Today, which is an album track from Songs in the Key of Life. But the thing that happened time and time again on that show, and it's that, to me, it proves that idea that you only use 5% of your brain at any given time, was that I am not a guy who memorizes lyrics. I had no idea what the lyrics to that song were. I just knew I loved the tune, and I liked that idea of Love's in Need of Love Today. If you listen to that song on the America Tribute to Heroes or on the album, written in 1976, I believe, it is about 9/11. It is about the show we were doing. It is saying, it's a newscaster coming on saying, the world looks like it's ending, but we can't just give in to that. We have to send our love in right away. And I knew none of that. And yet, that was the song that I, off the top of my head, suggested, which makes me think that we are all, in our better moments, we're just vehicles for something much smarter and meaningful than ourselves.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions, but how do you possibly decide the lineup when you're talking about Bruce Springsteen and Stevie Wonder, and I know Neil Young was on that show, and Tom Petty, Celine Dion, Paul Simon? How do you possibly come up with a lineup?
Well, that was not my job. I was consulting on all that. It actually was Jimmy Iovine, who I've had the pleasure of working with many times, and Joel started, I think Joel got the call from all the networks. Jimmy jumped in and helped definitely with all the musicians, like, who do we want? And everyone pretty much said yes. I can think of one person who had some sort of demand, and we said, screw that.
Who was that?
I don't want to say. I'm not going to say.
All right.
But
can you tell us what the demand was?
Someone wanted to do two songs, and someone else wanted to do their new single, and it was all that sort of idea of there's none of that on this show. And that's why that show is the thing I'm most proud of. My wife's yelling at me made me say to Joel things like, we just have no show business here. There's no intros. There's no names. No one was actually introduced.
So there were 21 guests, and it was on September 21st. Was that why there was 21 guests?
No. There were 21 guests because that, you know, how many fit in the slot. And it was actually, when you ask about the stars who were on it, the most interesting thing to me was, you know, the way it worked, every network was in on it, along with, like, everybody. But the networks were each, I think, picking, like, one person from their network to be on it. So we actually ran out of people very quickly. We ran out of spaces for people very quickly.
Right.
So I think around the third day, George Clooney, who was literally running script for me, this shows you how people got into the spirit of it. He literally would sit and go, David, you need me to run that over to the script department. So I would write something. He'd bring it over. But at one point, he invited Brad Pitt, who was very close to be there and to hang out while we were working. And they were in the hallway outside where I was sitting at CBS Television City. And I remember George came into Joel and said, Brad wants to be on the show. And I think the thing is there was no space left for Brad.
Wow.
I said Brad Pitt, right?
Right, okay. Yeah. That's crazy.
So it's Brad Pitt. And I remember very well, George Clooney said, we should get a phone bank. And if you watch that show, my belief is, in addition to my wife and Joel and Jimmy Iovine and all the other people who worked on it for nothing, I think that George Clooney's decision to create that phone bank was half
the reason
we made.
With famous people in there, I remember that.
And that's become a tradition now. But that was just came out of George, a great idea from George. And it was insane. Like, we were in a little TV, you know, in the booth, and the camera came on with, like, Jack Nicholson and all these icons sitting next to each other just with no
ego.
So
they were coming into the studio at CBS. This is on Fairfax?
Yeah.
And so literally stars were just coming over to help out, answer phones.
Yeah, because it was that idea of there was nothing you could do to help. In L.A., for sure, that sense of what are you going to do? And I remember really well, my wife also yelled at me. She says the morning of the show, someone leaked where it was, and it was supposed to be kept completely secret. I think someone at the L.A. Times might have put it in the article. And so there was this, like, bomb threat scare.
Oh, brother.
And my wife said, you can't go. You have two kids. You cannot go. And I'm like, I'm not going to the Middle East. I'm going to Beverly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to Fairfax. And I went anyway. It's, like, probably the only time I've directly, over her objection, said, she said, I refuse to let you go. And I said, I'm going.
Does she yell at you a lot?
That seems to be
a little bit. No, not too much.
You do need your own show. Do you need celebrities?
Well, here's what's so exciting is that this special made over $200 million.
Yeah, I got nothing. I didn't have any points.
No, it made it for charities. It didn't make it. You guys didn't get paid.
No, I didn't.
No, of course you didn't get paid. No, but what were the charities exactly?
Oh, no, it was a special fund brought up for the families of
the
victims of 9/11. And it ended up, I remember a few things so vividly because, for instance, that morning Joel was busy, like, with directing, and he said, you have to be on a phone call with all the lawyers. And I was like, all the lawyers? Okay. I was on a phone call. I think it was 200 lawyers. It was a conference call of 200 lawyers.
Where were they at?
They were all the chief counsel for every network that was showing the show around the world. And eventually every network showed the show.
So wait a minute. So it's ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox.
But
then all the cable channels jumped in. Everyone jumped in. And I had to run through the show what we were doing with all the lawyers. And by the way, everything that happened in that idea, again, of in the toughest situation you'll ever be in, and again, fortunately, I'm not in a war situation because I would not survive, but in this situation, everything that went wrong was right. Like, for instance, we had photos of these people because my wife sort of helped Joel and I discuss, let's really write about the heroes of this situation. Let's write about, and so we had pictures of the people we were talking about in large measure, and eventually, like, there was I think some lawyer said, we can't clear a few of these photos. So Joel said, to hell with the photos. We don't need photos. Let's get candles. And if you watch a show, that's one of the things that made the show powerful and meaningful was it wasn't another TV show. Every news show had images. This had candles. It was a prayer service. It was like our town.
It was. It was like a memorial.
Yeah, right. Just, and there was no really show beautiful. Business. And there's famous stories of a head of a network who I'm very close to. When Alicia Keys was on it, she was pretty new. Like, there was no, that was like one of the early times where he said, where the hell is the intro? Why is there no intro? And I said, there are no intros. And I went, there's no show business. It's not that. The next day, the New York Times wrote something about how brilliant it was that there was none of that. And the head of a network called me and said, you know what? You were right.
Oh, right. That's a good feeling.
Believe me, that does not happen.
That sounds like the end of the world to me. Yeah, like, that's
and the show did win a Peabody.
Yes, I won. I lost the Emmy as the head writer. The writing staff was nominated, and we because it was a show I didn't get paid for. I think I lost $4,000 on the show because I had to buy my wife a dress. I had to rent a tuxedo. I'm sure get a car, buy tickets for her sister and her husband. And lose. And it was actually, it was kind of horrible. It was my wife. It was.
And you're like, how can you not give me the show business award for this show, which is not show business?
Exactly. Which lost to Saturday Night Live. That's a weird category.
Yeah, I'm done with Saturday Night Live where they have Betty White go, ladies and gentlemen, Jay-Z. It's like,
as
no,
opposed to
no.
recently when I got to lose to Sarah Silverman, that was much
no,
better.
Well, that's much.
How many Emmy Awards have you been?
I'm a two-time loser. That's all.
But you've been nominated for two.
Yes.
That's amazing, though.
It's an honor just to lose.
I would imagine that it is.
Wait, I'm going to ask one question about the telethon. You're not going to tell us who wanted to do two songs or who wanted to do their single. My question is, do you think it came from those celebrities themselves, or were their agents or managers being in show business mode and just asking?
I think it was
for what
managers.
They would always
I think
want.
It was, I think it was managers being in show business.
Not getting it. Not getting this is not the
this
show.
This is different. In fact, I will tell you how different it was. This is probably my other favorite moment. A lot of these things, it's funny because maybe that's why you stay married. A lot of your favorite stories end up being involving your significant other. But I remember really vividly the day of the show, about 2 hours, 3 hours before the show. I'm in a little room, dressing room, talking to Julia Roberts about what she's going to say. And Clint Eastwood is in a makeup chair, waiting. He's just arrived, and he's sitting there. He's not getting made up, I don't think.
Yeah.
And Julia Roberts, we finished going over what she's going to say, and I know her weirdly. I think she'd already married, is this right? Already married Lyle Lovett, who was a friend of mine. So I sort of knew her, and she goes, David, what do you think I should wear tonight? And I said, hold on, I got to call my wife, because this will be the day Julia Roberts asked me for fashion advice. Because if you know me, that was a story. But the craziest thing about this story is that as she says this, I hate to reveal this, but Clint Eastwood, who Julia could not see, but who I could see, I was in his eye line, rolled his eyes at me like, why does she care what we wear tonight?
Yeah.
If you watch that show, Clint wore some jacket that did not fit him right, and he looks like he's broken his arm. And Julia Roberts looks like Julia Roberts.
You know
what's
so funny is I remember distinctly Clint Eastwood coming out and me being like, oh, couldn't somebody tell him? Because he looked like an old man. Because the jacket was...
I can't believe you remember this.
No,
that's
I remember.
Amazing.
This is what I remember. The jacket was buttoned in that way that, like, uncomfortably, it didn't quite
fit
him.
Yeah.
It's so
and he
funny.
Didn't... Yeah, and instead of looking like powerful...
Like Clint Eastwood, like
Clint
we want to see him.
He looked like an old man.
In other words, especially if we're not giving intros and we're not talking up people, you got to at least look like the celebrity we want you to be.
It's not show business, but you should still look...
Present yourself.
...relatively
what did Julia? Decent. What did Julia Roberts wear?
I don't remember.
Come on.
I swear, I have not looked at the show in over a decade, and I looked at only the first 15 minutes last night, so I do not know.
All right, David, let me ask you something.
I don't know what I wore, but I'm sure it was sexy.
When you work for these awards... Well, you have a tux now, don't you have a tux?
I don't own a tux.
That's crazy.
No, I rent and I have to wear a tux fairly often. I never would.
David,
buy
a lot of guys in LA have tuxes and don't have suits.
I understand that
because
of
the award
shows.
Well, you need to get a tux, but it
wearing one tonight. But that's it.
Are you really? And you rented it?
No, I'm wearing a suit tonight.
Okay,
and I have one.
Can I just tell you? Did you have a tailor fit it to you?
The tux or
either anything.
Yes, I did.
Okay, because when a guy buys a suit, that's like the first step in purchasing clothes. But the second step is tailoring. And if you don't tailor your suit, you may as well not wear a suit.
If you don't tailor, the terrorists win.
Christine Blackburn will tell you, if you're a man, you tailor your suit. Don't even think twice. Tailor your suit.
I wear shorts generally, and you don't have to tailor.
No, but when you're going to an award show, when you're dressed up, recently a guy says to me, I had the pants taken in. I said, did you put the jacket on and have it tailored? No, it's fine. It's not fine. Trust me. Men don't understand that it's not fitting the way you think it is.
I need a wife who yells at me.
So you gave me some good advice once years ago, which is about shoes. It's like women will look at your shoes, and if your shoes are shitty, they don't care what else you're wearing.
Why didn't you ever take that advice?
Eventually, I did, although I'm wearing flip-flops right now. Eventually, I realized that,
Here's my question, David Wild.
Yes.
What is it like when you work for an award show? Do you often work with the same people?
Yeah, it's actually a weird life. It's kind of seasonal families. Like I go, like my Grammy family, my CMA family. It's like I've done the Grammys for 2009, forever. I've done it for, I'm coming up on... 16, 17 years with the Grammys.
Right.
CMAs are probably 12, 13 years. So these are people you spend like a month with. And like more than that, there's even like these hosts who become like that. Like LL Cool J is like that. I feel like family with him. Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood, who I do the CMAs with, but the producers, yeah. And then occasionally, you know, you get fired by your family, but that happens in real life.
But let me ask you, when you say you work with the same people, name the jobs you're talking about. You work with the same, go.
Oh, there, I'd say of the 100, say, people who work on the Grammys, there 85 of them stay the same for the...
But what are their jobs? They are writers.
I work with
they
directors,
gaffers.
I'm on the Grammys, for instance, I'm a co-producer and the writer. A writer with, and I work with Ken Ehrlich, who's the executive producer. But I work with I work most closely with executive producers and directors, and then I work with script departments. You know, there's like the people who have the toughest job, the people who have to run after me and keep me organized and get the whatever I change a word on a show. It then has to be run to 100 people.
Like, no, I didn't know that.
Throughout, no, every script change makes, like, my job is relatively easy because I'm not the one who then has to communicate that to a million people, because everyone literally has to be on the same page.
But isn't this electronic now?
No, it is not electronic. And there was an attempt to make it electronic, but there's a problem with that, is that the internet fails.
But what about, like, if I have a Google Doc and I share it with you, and when I change something in the Google Doc, it changes, and you see it
change.
As
writers, when you write with a group now, you use Google Docs often. I often write alone, so there's not usually the need for that. But what the problem is when you get to people in a truck about half a mile away, and the director is in a truck, you know, when you get to the other, all the people who need it, you cannot count on the internet not going down.
And you're talking about your department. Would you call it the producing and writing staff? In other words, this has nothing to do with the stage management, as it were, in terms of the lighting,
the
props,
the music. No, I work with stage managers very closely, too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I work with stage managers, but these are all different departments. I'm usually hired as a writer. Sometimes I'm a producer and a writer, but I'm often just the writer, although I get involved in a lot of things. But
it's just that you wear so many different hats, and I'm just trying to make
it. Balding.
But I make it for clear to people out there who don't understand this world. I mean, yeah. I know you live in it, and this is what you see. But what people don't understand is what goes on behind the scenes.
The amount of people involved
is the craziest. No, I was a TV critic at Rolling Stone briefly. I still am a contributing editor, but as a TV critic, I am ashamed now. And this is like when I read reviews. It's like people watch TV like, how come that's not perfect? And the real question is, how the fuck does anything happen?
Yeah.
Because what you're trying to do is wrestle chaos into something viewable. And
yeah.
I mean, and things happen, like on the Grammys, you know, Whitney Houston dies the night before. So redo your show and
Jesus.
Then get that communicated to a million people. That's the famous, you know, that story's been told many times. But like Ella was very sick. It was his first year hosting. And he called me at like 5 o'clock and said, I'm going to bed, because he'd already rehearsed the whole real script, the original script. And then he goes, I'm going to sleep. Are we locked and loaded? I said, we are locked and loaded. And then Whitney Houston died. It spread around the Grammys. And I had to go and rework and write a whole new open. And Ken Ehrlich had to work with me and also reorder the show and add new musical numbers that weren't in the show.
Was she supposed to be performing?
No, she was not supposed to be performing.
But you had to at least address it. Had
to
be addressed.
Oh, no, you have to address
it.
And that's what you find is, that's what the lesson I learned from Tribute to Heroes. People do turn to TV. TV network shows, a lot of sitcoms. I think the slightly declining interest in things, just in terms of, because there's so many options. But when shit happens,
yeah,
people do turn the TV because it's
absolutely
like the town center.
It brings us together.
It's close to community. And that's what, like, when you did that with Tribute to Heroes, I said, I remember when Whitney Houston died, I said to LL that night, I said, because he knew her, he was good friends with her. I
sure.
met her. I was not a friend of hers, but I knew her. And Ken Ehrlich knew her very well. But LL was a friend of hers, and he was really upset. And I said, listen, this is horrible, but the only positive thing for us is that if we do this right, we're about something.
Yeah.
And that's what I think, that's what Tribute to Heroes taught me, is like, all right, we're about something.
Does LL stand for? Do you know?
Ladies Love.
Is that true?
Cool James.
Wow.
But his name is Todd, so I call
his
him
name
Todd.
Is Todd. His real name is
Ladies
Todd.
Love Cool
this is a
Todd.
Big improvement over Todd.
He always said, he's for years, for a decade, he's told me, call me Todd. And I'm like, I still like LL. I'm going to go with LL.
Yeah.
So when you get on shows like this, do you basically just kiss your wife goodbye and say, honey, I'm going to have to see you in 2 weeks?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, like when I there's times when I go, for instance, to Nashville or New York, do shows, and then literally have to kiss goodbye, or not kiss goodbye. But I think the weird thing is, like, I'm just hitting this point where those kids that we were talking about, my older one is freshman year of college, writing for the school paper at Berkeley.
So great.
And my younger son is a junior, just got an A in his calculus final.
So great.
About half an hour ago, I got the text.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so now it's like I realize the weird part is this weird career that I fell into, and that's a whole other story, but I literally fell into this because of, in large measure, because I got nominated for an Emmy, everyone sort of, or in the industry, people knew, who's this guy who was a head writer for the Tribute to Heroes? That sort of put me in television.
Sure.
That took me away from journalism to a large degree. So, yeah, but the weird thing is I have had this weird life where I go from show to show, but there'll be like a week like this week where I don't have, I have a call I have to make in 2 minutes, which is why I'll run out of here for a show that's in like 4 weeks. But I have now two shows coming up, but I think I've spent more time with my kids than most dads, because if the show rehearsal doesn't start till 10:30, I can drop them at school. And
yeah.
So
now
I
they're
like
in college.
Okay. But now they don't care.
But now they're in college as well.
Yeah.
So how good does that feel as a parent to get that far?
It feels good. It's amazing to be, I mean, I joke around it, but it's amazing to be married 20 years because, I mean, and as couples divorce right and left, when, you know, we've hit that point where like all these couples we know are splitting up.
Yeah.
And every time we go, I can't believe we outlasted them. And it's like, I really think there should be a prize.
I'm happy for you. No, well, it's a big deal. It's hard
to get something.
It's hard to stay married, but she sounds like a really neat person.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's the hottest business manager I could find.
Is that right?
Yes. Hottest
let
MBA.
Let me ask you something. Are your kids impressed that you know a lot of celebrities, or do they not care?
They're impressed by the weirdest things because they've literally, you know, maybe a year or two after we're talking about 9/11, I remember their first concert was a private show by
Paul McCartney, wasn't it?
No, Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, Fleetwood
Mac. A private show where they were in a rehearsal with me. And I was like, they're not going to know what's normal. But now there's little things like my older son loves Jimmy Pardo.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's
like,
great.
And the fact that when we went to see Jimmy Pardo when I did Sketch Fest a few weeks ago, and the Jimmy Pardo mentioned him and being my son, that is when I've arrived.
That is so nice. That is really, really good. Let me see you smile. Yay. Aw. So listen, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Yes.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
The wheel landed on accident. My favorite accident, my only car accident, and may it be the only car accident I ever had, was in Jamaica. I went with Howie Epstein, my groomsman, one of the heartbreakers, my favorite, the toughest little Jewish guy of all time, my only friend I ever lost to drugs, and I wish every day he were alive. I think about him constantly. I went with him, Carlene Carter, the singer, who is June Carter's daughter, Johnny Cash's stepdaughter, to Jamaica. And I went with a girl who was not my girlfriend, just a friend. So that's less memorable. But in any case,
no, go ahead.
I didn't get to the accident. No, I'm done.
No, say the accident.
And there was an accident, and I got out of it because Johnny Cash, I was staying at Johnny Cash's house, and they said, we don't want any trouble because Johnny Cash had been held up by a bunch of thugs, and they said, you can go. That's it.
Talk about burying the lead. I had an accident. It was a simple girl. I was staying at John Cash's house. What the fuck? You were staying at John Cash's house?
Which was Elizabeth Browning's house originally, and I'll never understand how.
What happened?
What happened was we were going from Negril to Ochos Rios or wherever we were going, and a local said, go around. Like, he was stopped.
Yeah.
And he goes, you're open. Go around. Go free. And I went right into a head-on collision. A local came out with a switchblade, a local guy, threatening me. Howie, who was about 5'4" and 14 pounds, defended me. The police came, put me in jail, at which point they asked, where are you staying? And I was staying at the Cash estate, and they said, basically, you can go.
Wow. Oh my God! Even your shotgun story worthy stories have celebrities.
My name drops have name drops.
Yeah, whoa. It's like whoa. Sorry. That was a name dropping out of the sky. It's if so many name drops they've piled up and are now hitting the microphones.
Exactly.
Listen, one question: when you're on Adam Carolla, do you get worried about chiming in?
It's an evolution. I went on and he seemed to really like me. And then I'm at my 103rd or 102nd appearance now.
Oh, God.
But after about 50, there was a time when I started to not talk much.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't tell, because I think people often have that sense of like, I'm not sure if he's not leaving the spaces for people to jump in the way, like, for instance, asking a lot of questions.
Right.
Doesn't do that. And I remember thinking, I'm not sure he wants me to speak. And then there was one show where I really didn't speak. And he goes, why aren't you talking? And I was like, I don't know if you want me to talk.
Yeah.
And he said, I fucking love when you talk because it means I don't have to talk. And
wow.
Then that was a breakthrough moment where I realized, okay, I'll just shove in. And for a while, I think, and maybe still, a lot of people who listened to the show didn't like me. And my younger son, loves to read the Reddit where people like make fun of me.
Yeah.
But then at a certain point, people grow fond of the stone in their shoe, I think.
Well, I love you on that show. And I'm sure Adam, of course, can control the whole ship himself.
Yeah,
but
you wouldn't be there if he didn't want you there.
Yeah,
it's not like the network forcing
you. Well, that's what Barry Katz, I just did his show, his
Industry Standard
the other day. And he goes, I thought I was good on that show, and I've been there once.
Yeah.
And you've been there 101. So I think, yeah, we'll see. But I do enjoy it. I actually do it because for writing for these shows, my skill that I need is to write something quickly that works for people. So in that show,
in the moment,
it keeps you in the moment, and you have to be very in the moment with Adam.
Well, thank you so much for coming on our show again. We really appreciate
My
it,
pleasure.
David. You
thank
always
you,
bring
thank
it,
you,
man.
Thank you.
No,
we
thank
really
you so
appreciate
much.
It. And I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen, and of course Ben Stewart. Thanks so much for helping us today, Ben. And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know he wrote the theme song. Follow Me. Did you?
I
know
was
that?
Staying at his estate. And it did not keep me out of jail.
Do you know Cowboy Mouth, David?
Yes, I love Cowboy Mouth.
Love Cowboy Mouth. And, you know, John Thomas was with the Red Rockers, and you might remember a little tune called China.
I do remember China.
And sometimes in Trader Joe's, they play that, and I sit in Trader Joe's, and I go up and down the aisle, and I dance, and I sing.
Do you say to people, I know the guy who sings that, and they said, shut the fuck up, this is Studio City. We don't give a shit, or less be less.
And on behalf of our storyteller
don't
tonight,
drop names.
David Wild, thank you again so much for coming on. And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy of week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.